My mother believed and my father believed that if I wanted to be president of the United States, I could be vice president. This is
America. Former Vice President Joe Biden has been elected president of the United States.
It is my greatest honor and privilege to have been your president. We will be back in some form.
We are still deeply divided.
Public health experts warned this was coming unless more was done. And here we are now.
Are you proud of what happened here today?
Absolutely.
Never before in American history has there been an uprising like this.
Of the 75 million Americans who voted for Donald Trump, I don't know how many today are feeling, dear God, what was I thinking? But I would wager a lot more are thinking, let's carry on this fight.
Character matters. It matters. Tell them the truth matters.
The 21st century is going to be the American century. Because we lead not only by the example of our power, but by the power of our example. That is the history of the journey of America.
It's the Irishman in America, and we have an awful lot to talk about this week, from the worm that ate RFK's brain, to the star witness in the Trump trial, and Biden's ever-growing dilemma that could clearly cost him the election. The original portal to America, Marion McKeown, is here, but not stationed on O'Connell Street.
And no mooning. No mooning on this podcast, please.
How much news has the portal got over there, Marion? I doubt it's as front and centre as it is here.
They're a bit shocked. It made it into the New York Times and very bewildered by what I understand was a drunken lady twerking for a sustained period of time before the cops hold her off. Not got a lot of coverage. I mean, you know, there's a mixture of, you know, first of all, what were they thinking to put it on O'Connell Street? I'm sorry, but there's nothing on O'Connell Street except for fast food. You know, the place is desolate and it's a magnet for, you know, people wandering around bored looking for trouble. So I actually thought, why didn't they put in Kilkenny or, I don't know, Galway or, like, why did it have to be Dublin anyway? But, you know, there was bemusement at the mooning and the twerking. But it was awful. It was just depressing to hear people were showing, you know, neo-Nazi imagery on it and, you know, images of 9/11, you know, New York on fire. I just thought, oh, for God's sake.
I think that's actually
really,
part,
you know,
of the art of it, though, in some ways, that I think that when people are given the opportunity to communicate, what do they do? When we're given all of these platforms to really connect and bond, what we immediately do is start shouting and showing our willies to each other. I mean, it's so ridiculous,
but
it's such a reflection of the world we live in.
It's horrible. You know what? It's Trump. It's Trumpy. It's the kind of, you know, to me, I was in America, in New York for 9/11, you know, and I do remember the trauma of that. And it's not that people haven't made jokes about it or whatever since. But I think, you know, you're saying here's an interconnection with Dublin and New York and here we go. And it's, you know, and you say it's a school ground and it's like somebody going up and just punching somebody in the eye. You know, I just found it really like, eh. You know, and who cares if someone moons or twerks? I mean, for God's sake, I mean, that's kind of funny. But I don't think it's funny to go to the lowest common denominator of hate immediately. You know, I just think,
Anybody thought it was funny, but I did think it was bound to happen. And I felt like that might have been the creator's idea, that like to place it where they placed it, they had to know this was going to happen. And also, you know, I did think, is this maybe a government scheme to try and locate the gobshites in Dublin? Because it has been a magnet for them.
They're not that clever.
I mean, they didn't get to prosecute a lot of the people involved in those riots on November 23rd. And if you put something like this out in the middle of O'Connell Street, I guarantee you some of the same people are going to show up and pull down their pants.
So you can be sure of it.
Maybe they're taking the names and numbers and doing a face scan on each one. The New Yorkers seem to be much more like, here's a picture of a potato.
it's slightly oblivious, I think, in their own way. But not, you know, I actually, what you just said there would be even more chilling if this is a ploy to get names and numbers, you know what I mean? And to surveil people. That would really give me the creeps. I mean,
keep
I don't know which is worse,
this
actually.
Guy. Yeah,
my
yeah.
Jeepers. This just gets worse and worse.
Well, this is, you know, a distraction, of course, from what's been happening in New York, but what's been happening this week. I do want to start with Joe Biden and the position that he finds himself in. I mean, We know this, Marion. He wants to be a humanitarian. He's so abundantly conscious at all times of his legacy and his place in history. And yet, I think it's now plain for the world to see that what's happening in Palestine is grotesque, barbaric, horrifying, and is in total contravention of any and all rules of engagement. It's also very clear to anyone with eyes that it's costing more innocent lives every day that passes, and Joe Biden is a part of that, whether he likes it or not.
Yeah. You know, I find this profoundly depressing. And I think that this is a man, as you say, who wants to do the right thing, who is a fundamentally decent man who wants to do the right thing, and yet he can't bring himself to do it. He can't bring himself to do it for multiple reasons, not least of which is the election that's staring him in the face in November and the fear that he has alienated not just Republicans, he's not going to get their votes anyway, but that he's alienated a lot of Democrats as well. And the fear that if he doesn't give arms to Israel, that something could happen, like a strike from Iran or whatever, and they will all point the fingers at Biden and say, see, you abandoned us, you abandoned us, you left us. It's your fault that this happened. Mm. And I think he has, you know, he's tried to do this thing of splitting the baby, saying no bunker buster bombs. So there was supposed to be 3,500 bombs, those devastating, awful bombs that are called bunker busters because they literally create a massive, a crater the size of a New York block in the ground. And the blast field from them is so devastating to anyone within its range. And this is what Israel has been using. This is why Gaza is flattened and it's in the state it's in. And these were American bombs. So he said, OK, if you're going into Gaza, you're not getting any more of these bombs. We're not going to help you do it. And if he had held his nerve, if he had just held his nerve and stared down the critics and stared down the Republicans and stared down the critics in his own party and Netanyahu, who frankly nobody has any respect for on the international stage, I think Netanyahu could have folded, because the truth is they cannot continue without American arms. So what he's done now is this kind of split the baby thing, where, as I say, he's saying, OK, we're freezing the shipment of these bombs, but we're going to enter into another $1 billion, $1.25 billion arms deal, actually. And in this, you're going to get a whole bunch of other stuff, of weaponry, of tanks, of all the other things that you need to basically level Rafah. But we're just not going to give you the bombs. And, you know, so this kind of thing of trying to...
And also, it's just bombs of a certain size. Like, I mean, yeah, you say, yeah, what is it, 2,000 pounds? Or what was it?
Yeah, I mean, 2,000. There are 500-pound bombs and 2,000-pound bombs. And they're...
So the 1999 bombs are okay.
Yeah, basically.
Like, I mean, it's just so absurd when you put it out there, isn't it? And it's just an attempt to appease everybody.
And the problem is, if this is the best that a good man can do, because I do think Biden is fundamentally a decent human being who cares about other people. But if this is the best he can do, then it's just, people wonder, you know, when you look back in history and you see how dictators have come to power and you see how atrocities have happened, and it's not because everybody is in an evil, you know, conspiracy. It's because, as JFK said, evil thrives when good men do nothing, and women, for that matter, you know. And I just find this so profoundly disappointing. And if you look at what's happening in Gaza, you look at the famine, and you look at primarily, God, if it was working, if it had been a devastating, traumatic thing that actually succeeded in eliminating Hamas. But of course it isn't. Of course it isn't. Mm. Hamas has reassembled in the north. Now Israel's gone back into northern Gaza, where there's already a famine. They're pounding rubble there. They're causing even more devastation to the poor people who, God love them, who are going through hell there, who are dying slowly of starvation, if not from bombings. And, you know, and then you who knows, my God, what lies ahead in Rafah. And this, okay, I think that we do forget what started all of this. It was Hamas that started all of this. It was that atrocious attack on October 7th. And Hamas has to be held responsible for a large part of this, but not for the way in which Israel is choosing to prosecute this war. And they are playing into Hamas's hands, because damn it, this is what Hamas wants. They've never shown any concern for the people of Gaza. They could care less. You know, even now they're diverting aid. We know that. And it's, you know, and there's chaos. You know, I spent a long 2 years in and out of Somalia, and I saw what happens in a failed state. And I saw what happens when you destroy every piece of infrastructure and, you know, you destroy every piece of housing and you destroy every life there. And what happens is warlords and gangs take over. You will have Haiti and you will have Somalia in Gaza because Israel ain't going to fix it. Mm. And we know that it's going to take 15 years minimum to rebuild the houses and just ship out the rubble that Israel has created. You think they're going to pick up the tab for that? No. And I think that Biden had a golden opportunity. And, you know, for a president who's so invested in his own legacy to have wobbled as he did is, to me, just incomprehensible. And now nobody's happy. Now, he's never going to get those voters back in Michigan and Wisconsin and Pennsylvania that he needs to win the election. Because, why, you know, it's a betrayal. It's almost a double betrayal because he's making it look, it's a sleight of hand. It's like he's coming out and saying on the one hand, oh, look, I'm doing this. Look, look, I'm standing up for human rights. I'm standing up for humanitarian law. And then, you know, he's got something else behind his back. And it's incomprehensible.
It's extraordinary, isn't it, that Trump has not been on the campaign trail, but Joe Biden has been out there slamming his foot into his mouth and taking these hypocritical stances and watching Trump grow in the polls. Like he is leading in most polls.
Yeah. And this is, again, the thing that the starvation, the devastation and just the hell on earth that is happening in Gaza. For what? I mean, you know, if Biden thinks it's helping him politically, the steps he's taking, he's mistaken. Even if he had that cold cynicism of, you know what, I'm going to do this because I got to do this to get to here. And when I get to here, I'll fix it. You know, and politicians are always compromising, or they're always justifying that kind of compromise to themselves. But Netanyahu has no interest in this war ending. Why would he? The end of this war is the end of his political career.
Yeah, and we've said that a few times, right? But I do want to get to this question of Trump not opening his mouth on this issue. There's two possibilities here. There's one is that the war is done by the time America goes to the polls. In which case, how this has been handled could deeply impact the number of people that will vote for Biden. If it is still going on, is there a chance that people would vote, I'm not interested in either of these candidates, or protest vote for Trump as a reaction to what's taking place?
Oh, I think that a lot of people will vote for Trump in this because he hasn't really put his finger on the scale. Like, we all know he's pro-Palestinian. I beg your pardon, pro-Israeli. We all saw his despicable record when he just gave Netanyahu anything he wanted during the 4 years he was president. You want to move the embassy to Jerusalem? Go for it. You want to take over the West Strip? You want to send in illegal settlers? You want to beat the crap out of the Palestinians there? Go for it. You know, we heard Jared Kushner speaking in Harvard, that little pipsqueak. Oh, my God, I'm sorry. I just find him insufferable.
That is a very kind word.
But it's probably about the kindness. But he spoke about how, you know, almost if they could just get rid of, if they could cleanse Gaza of these Palestinians, it would be a great seafront property. It could be Miami, for God's sake. We could be making a fortune there as a state, you know, as real estate developers. And then he went back to say, oh, I didn't mean that. I didn't mean, but he did say, get them out and put them somewhere in the desert and then, you know, take the coast. Like this treatment where Palestinians barely register as humans. And for Israelis, given their history, that should be chilling for them. That should be, and I am a huge defender of Israel and its right to exist, but to hear Palestinians spoken about in the way that they were spoken about in the 1930s should be chilling, where you hear these politicians and they speak about them as though, as I say, they are not human, as though, and they've been called, you know, animals and various other things by senior Israeli cabinet members. You know, the Israeli people, they know their history. They know their history. And why are they letting this happen?
I mean, that is a question, isn't it? Like, where does it end and what has to happen for it to end?
I accept the trauma, absolutely, of October 7th, and your heart would break. And if you look at Israel, the Jewish history of trauma upon trauma, attack upon attack, slaughter upon slaughter, of course they are desperate to have their security sort of reestablished, but not like this. And, you know, as I say, having been in failed states, and I suspect that Israel might, this might be Netanyahu's endgame, is to have a failed state next door despite all the chaos and the lack of security, because that means they can go in whenever the hell they want and pound rubble, basically, and say, this is an ongoing security threat to us. We're not having these gangs. We're not having this resurgence of Hamas. And that will mean there will never be a two-state solution. And I honestly, to me, this seems like Biden is just playing into Netanyahu's hand, that he had a moment, he had an opportunity to do the right thing here. And you know, Israel cannot survive without America's support. They know that. We know that. Hmm. And I really think that it could have been the opportunity where the Israelis, the Jewish people could have said to Netanyahu, look what you're doing to us. Look at the damage you're causing to our relations. Look at the way we're being shunned by the world. You know, we need new leadership. And, I think that that could have been the moment.
There is a big stand-up Gaza charity comedy night taking place in Vicar Street on June 6th with all sorts of great acts. I can't be there because I'm doing a show in Liverpool that night, but I'd urge you to buy tickets. They're available now from Ticketmaster.ie. I joked at the start about the worm that ate RFK's brain. And people probably thought, yeah, that's funny. No, the New York Times reported on May 8th that 2012 deposition during divorce proceedings. He said a doctor believed an abnormality on his brain scans from 2010 was caused, and I quote, by a worm that got into my brain and ate a portion of it and then died. Marion, where do you even start with this?
Oh, dear God. All I'm going to say is that worm must have had slim pickings. I think it died of starvation.
It died of starvation.
No kidding. Because, and that is, of course, being completely facetious, because if Robert F. Kennedy Jr. were just an idiot, you know, we could all dismiss him. He's actually a smart guy. Like, he is a smart guy. You know, he had a successful career as an environmental lawyer. And not everyone agreed with the way he went about his business. Not everyone agreed with the way he treated his colleagues at Riverkeeper. Not everyone loved him. I can tell you that for nothing. But this is a guy who has achieved things in his life. And, you know, of course, you know, you can imagine I haven't seen the late night comics, but I kept thinking, I've got to go back and see this, because I'm sure they had a ball with it, because you couldn't not.
Yeah, but all jokes aside, right? I do the jokes on the weekends. But here today, I do want to ask, is it possible that this happened? I mean, okay. I've looked up and read around it, and a pork tapeworm larva, they're calling it.
That's right.
There are experts saying that this is possible, that this took place.
Yeah, but not the way he claims. Now, let's go back to the context of this. We spoke before about, I met him at a couple of events in New York for the Riverkeeper, you know, fundraisers and what have you. I never found him to be in any way pleasant. And I don't mean, you know, as in lad handling, oily politician, because he wasn't that. Arrogance, he just exudes arrogance. And a sort of a rascal. He's not somebody you'd want to spend a lot of time with up close and personal, from my brief encounters with him, and indeed the three or four encounters I've had on the campaign trail with him. So what he was saying, he had a really nasty divorce from the mother of his four children. And she subsequently committed suicide after the divorce. And it was very, very traumatic. But basically, he didn't want to give her any money. Kennedys are notoriously tight. They're a bit like the old Trumps. They don't like to give it away in divorce settlements, you know?
Okay.
So anyway, he was claiming that because a worm ate my brain, the dog ate my homework, whatever, you know, that he didn't have the same earning power that he used to have. Therefore, he couldn't make any money anymore, because between that and the mercury poisoning and the voices in his head, I'm sure, Jesus.
But there's easier ways to convince a judge that you can't earn as much money as you did than by saying my brain's spinning.
But you know, you're right. What you just said there, because I actually did speak to a friend of mine about this, and he said, look, the way he explained it. The other thing about Robert F. Kennedy is, a bit like Trump, don't believe very much at all of what he says. And I'm not just talking about the wacko conspiracy theories. The number of times he has said flat out, I never said that, you know, about things that are now embarrassing. that, you know, there's recordings. It's there. There's
he gaslights
video,
us
there's
all.
Sound.
Yeah.
He's a perennial gaslighter. So anyway, it seems that he could have eaten a tapeworm, or he could, you know, in a pork sandwich or whatever. And the larvae from that could have found its way into his brain. It could have hatched there. And this sort of, it could have formed a cyst by, you know, stuff kind of wrapping itself around it to protect the brain. But they don't eat brains. They go there to die. So basically, the worm saw his brain and said, that's a grand old graveyard there. I go up there and bury myself. Sure, no one will ever notice. There's nothing going on there anyway. And so basically, that's what could have happened. The larvae could have got into his brain and died there. And then you had this kind of cyst that formed around it to protect the brain. But now his uncle, Ted Kennedy, who, you know, I... very flawed politician, but fundamentally, I really do believe, good man who did terrific work for poor Americans, for Americans who didn't have healthcare, didn't have education, didn't have a bunch of stuff. And I always found him to be a really engaging guy, but he died of a brain tumor. And it's understandable that Kennedy might have thought, you know, because these things can run in families. There can be a vulnerability, I should say, in a family if you know. So he had it all tested, and there was apparently a teeny fleck, and this is how they came to this conclusion. But it seems, according to my doctor pal, that his explanation is a little crude and a little wide of the mark, and the worm didn't actually eat his brain because they don't eat, you know, larvae don't eat. Yeah. They just go in right, there and make a little bed for themselves.
So if evidence was thin on the ground that this actually happened, you know what wasn't thin on the ground? Signatures to get him registered on the ballot in Texas.
Yes.
More than 100,000 signatures from registered voters. I mean, he's gonna breeze onto all of these ballots at that rate.
You know what? This is interesting because he's got double the amount, I think, or something he needs for Texas now, or so he claims. But he's not going to be on every ballot because there are different constraints, there are different requirements, there are deadlines. Even with his vice president's enormous checkbook or his running mate's enormous checkbook, Nicole Shanahan, I'm not sure. He's on enough ballots already to do serious damage. He's like the worm that ate his brain. He's going to get in and nibble around at little bits that are actually going to make a difference. But Texas is interesting because Texas, after California, has the most electoral college votes. Texas is a big, big state. Now, Joe Biden was only beaten in Texas. I don't have the figures in front of me, but as I recall, by a surprisingly narrow margin. Like, it could have been under 10. It was certainly under 10 points. So if Kennedy gets on the ticket in Texas, who does he damage more? Because Biden ain't going to win Texas. You know, that's a given. There's no way Biden
can win
Texas.
Who does he damage more? That's the question.
But so does he take here in this instance, will he be taking voters from Trump? And if he does, will he make it so narrow that, oh my God, in a spooky shock, unthinkable, as there always are in elections, that could he, I don't think he could flip Texas to Biden, but it would be kind of funny if he did. But as I say, you know what, I'm going to try and look it up here. If I say 2.4%, and I haven't looked it up, or that was the margin between them, it seems very little, but I don't think it was as much as people thought it would be. So, you know, I don't think, like, Democrats have had this wet dream for decades that Texas is up for grabs. You know, next time we get Texas, next time. But it would be kind of ironic because I think that him getting on the ballot in Texas could do a lot of damage to Trump. Because there are, and I know, you know, I've said, like, from all of the Kennedy people I've spoken to at all the rallies I've gone to, it's about 70% Democrat. It's, no, you know, I'm going to go 60% Democrat. I'm going to go maybe 25% crazy conspiracy. We hate you, lockdown, blah, blah, blah. And then there seems to be a couple of MAGA strays now where they're turning up. They're not convinced they're going to vote for him, but they're turning up to hear what he has to say. And so, you know, so if you look at that breakdown, I mean, basically, you know, I don't think that Democrats in Texas are going to go Kennedy because Democrats in Texas tend to be deep blue. A couple of wackos might. But I think that there could be Republicans and never Trumpers who cannot bring themselves to vote for Biden because, damn it, they're Texans. And who could go with Kennedy. So it'll be interesting. You know, they just announced that they're going to have presidential debates, and already Kennedy's out whining, notwithstanding the large hole in his brain, and going, that's not fair, I'm not allowed to play. But I think like
yeah, but
or
is
not,
that a point though? That like I've always wondered that. Like why aren't we having anybody else at this debate?
You know, I actually don't think there is a point in having Kennedy there because he's not. There is no way Robert F. Kennedy can win the election.
Right.
If there was even a chance. Now, Ross Perot was allowed to join in because there was, you know, on math, he was on all 50 states. He was on all the ballots. You know, he was a contender and he took about 20% of the vote, mainly from George H.W. Bush. So, you know, there is, he was a national presence. He had a national game. Kennedy's going around with his, as I say, his very rich running mate. And he's hopping on a ballot here and hopping off there. And he's telling us he's on 9 ballots. And his pack that seems to have dumped him now said that they had 9 other states he was on. It turned out he wasn't on any of them. And they took their votes and went home or whatever, or their signature papers. I don't, you know, his campaign is chaotic. Yeah. And I've covered it quite a bit. It's pretty damn chaotic. He's not as, what's his name? Logan Roy would say in Succession, he's not a serious person. He's not a serious candidate. Well, and he doesn't deserve to be on the stage.
June 27th, stick it in your diary. First Biden-Trump debate. June 27th. That's when you need to get to a TV to see that play out. That's going to be absolute box office. And we'll be here to talk about it.
We will be here.
The very next day or whatever. We can get a podcast out to you. I will be back in Boston. We sold out 3 shows in 48 hours in Boston and worked forever to try and find somewhere else to put on a show, Marion, so we could add a 4th. We've done it. The Schubert Theatre in Boston. It's a massive,
that's lovely,
massive, ridiculous room. And yes, it's on the 26th of October. The tickets are on sale now. But for you, as excellent subscribers to the podcast, you get pre-sale access by using the password jokes at checkout, so you can get advance access to those tickets. If you're listening to this in Boston and the surrounding areas, make sure to book it. I know a lot of people missed out on the original tickets, so hopefully I'll see loads of you there on October 26th.
Terrific venue, by the way.
I love the look of it. We do need to get to the court case that everybody's been talking about and the star witness that we were primed for last time we spoke, Michael Cohen, the former fixer, as they called him. Uncharacteristically even-tempered, Marion, you'd have to say, on the stand, very zen. The whole game here is to make the jury trust this man, correct?
Yeah, and you know, the jury don't even have to trust him that much because altar boys do not hang around with thugs, as a rule of thumb. Trump surrounds himself with a lot of nasty people. You know, I remember coming across Michael Cohen first on the campaign trail. Oh my God, back in late 2015, when he and Corey Lewandowski, an out and out thug who has since been investigated for sexual assault and all kinds of things, the first time I came across him was at an event where he was accused of assaulting a Breitbart journalist, of shoving and thumping her and hurting her arm. And Breitbart is as pro-Trump as you can get. I mean, this guy was an obnoxious thug, and Cohen was always in his shadow. He was always hanging around somewhere. You know, Cohen, he cuts a pretty pathetic figure. Now, he was the guy who Trump fixer, the guy who took out the trash, the guy who did all the dirty work for Trump for 10 years and desperately wanted to be on the inside. But for Trump, he was a bit of a figure of fun. He didn't have what Trump wanted. Trump likes people who are richer, even more famous, even more powerful than he is, or even, you know, are huge celebrities. Cohen was basically a none too bright lawyer, but he could take out the trash. He could be relied on for that. And so anyway, he then was told that not only he thought in some world he was going to be Trump's chief of staff. And then he said, well, I didn't really believe that, but I wanted to be in the consideration. I wanted to be on the shortlist. And he thought Trump would at least take him
was
to Washington as
court?
A personal lawyer. No, but this was just the behind the thing that, you know, the behind the back stuff to
as
their
to why
falling
he was
out
there.
And their betrayal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And why he now, by his own admission, hates Trump so much. But if you look at how this guy's life was destroyed, and there was a very poignant moment, I thought. Now, as you said, I think they gave him Xanax or something because he seemed very calm.
And that's where we have to leave it this week on the free platforms. But if you want to come over and join us on patreon.com/Irishmanabroad, just in the space of a few clicks, you can access the full episode every single week. And trust me, heading towards November, you're going to want that in your life. Only a fiver a month. Access to the full back catalogue of Irishmen Abroad interviews, the Honey, You're Ruining Our Kid podcast, the Sonia O'Sullivan running podcast. There's so much over there. I'm not going to bore you with it. I will remind you, though, that I will be coming to America myself in November, October. The latest show that's gone on sale is at the Schubert Theatre in Boston. I mentioned it earlier in the podcast. Schubert Theatre in Boston. It's on sale now, October 26th. Maybe the biggest show I've ever done. And really excited. It's on sale. The link is in the info here, and hopefully I'll see you over on Patreon.